We all have our golden hour, our time to de-stress and reflect. To reach new levels of calm and contentment, check out Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. It's crafted using the highest quality full-spectrum hemp oil for bigger, broader effects to help you experience deeper relaxation and a brighter mood. As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. CBD is a real breakthrough in herbal products. The CBD brand that I take is Plus CBD from CV Sciences. Their Reserve Collection is a specially curated blend of cannabinoids, rich and bold, or when intense support is needed. Enjoy a deeper CBD experience with Plus CBD's Reserve Collection of oils and gummies. To learn more or to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest today is Dr. Tanya Dempsey. She's an expert in chronic disease, autoimmune disorders, and something called MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome. It's a trendy diagnosis these days, but there's more than just going on a low histamine diet, although diet can help. And we're going to take a look at some of the pathways by which patients with all the complex symptoms that we outlined in part one can move towards wellness. But before we get to solutions, it appears that this syndrome is becoming more and more pervasive. Is there something about our lifestyles, our diets, toxic exposures, or maybe even tick-borne diseases, infections that causes people to move in this direction?
Yeah, I think that you all the above. You know, I had a conversation with a leading expert in chemical intolerance, Dr. Claudia Miller. She's down in Texas, and she published a lot in this role in the sort of base of chemical intolerance or TILT, toxic-induced loss of tolerance. And, you know, she and I have talked about, you know, how the world has changed in the last, let's say, 50 years, maybe even, you know, 75, 80 years, maybe longer. The things that we're exposed to over the course of that time, starting back then when there were more exposures to petrochemicals and, you know, estrogen, things that, you know, never before in the history of mankind did we have to really, you know, deal with. And so I think these things sort of set the stage. I think the mast cells are seeing these chemical toxins, stressors. And I think over time, it becomes like a perfect storm. So I think that there are things that people are exposed to early on in life, maybe even in utero, maybe their parents were, you know, were exposed. And then, you know, that sort of sets the stage. And so some people, they'll have all these exposures, but maybe they will be fine. They will never develop MCAS. They'll never have any issues. Maybe there's some genetic factors that play a role. But in some people, it sort of sets the stage. There's exposures early on in life, and then, you know, maybe they grew up in a moldy apartment building, or maybe they had a real emotional traumatic stressor early in life, or any time in life, actually. You know, maybe then they, you know, moved out to the country and they, you know, played around in the grass and, you know, were exposed to ticks, or, you know, maybe they had a cat growing up who was in. You know, I have one patient who grew up with a cat in her crib, basically, and got Bartonella from the cat. You know, so there are all these different things that over time sort of build this. It's sort of like there's an initiating event, something early on in life. And then over time, there are these things that exacerbate until usually they're the straw that breaks the camel's back. There's one thing that then just the body can't handle anymore. And so I think that, I think we are seeing, so to answer your questions, we are absolutely seeing more of this. I don't think it's just because we're diagnosing people more with MCAS. I think really think that people are, we're seeing more chronic illness. We're seeing more issues. I think, you know, what we're putting in our body with food, the plastics, the chemicals, and now all that have been in the environment in the air for some time are now really taking its toll on us, on our, and on our children. And so, unfortunately, I think this is just going to, you know, not to be a negative person here, but I think it could get worse if we don't really rein it in and start to understand this better.
Absolutely. It's really a call to action to rein in our diets and pay attention to our environment. A diagnosis, it's often said that a diagnosis is only as good as the therapies that it invokes. And so, you know, having diagnosed MCAS, you know, it sounds like people are in a whole lot of trouble because it's a complex condition. The immune system has been activated. Mast cells are going crazy. How do you turn down the volume on that? And what are some of the techniques that you use? Let's start with diet. And I think it's an oversimplification to say, oh, you're just going a low histamine diet and, you know, everything will turn out okay. Would it be the case? It is for some patients. Fortunately, you know, they improve. But for some patients and many of the really complicated patients that you see, you know, diet is only a foot in the door.
Yeah, because, well, there's a histamine issue. And I think that for some people, the reason those low histamine diets work is because they have a histamine bucket. And the mast cells are making, you know, a lot of histamine and releasing it. And the food you're carrying, you know, that some foods are higher in histamine. And so, yeah, you fill the bucket too much, it's gonna overflow. So you eliminate the histamine from the diet and you eliminate some of that, you know, the amount of histamine in the body, right? So that is good,
right?
For some people where histamine is maybe the issue. But, you know, there are patients who have salicylate intolerances or oxalate intolerances. It's become so overwhelming. And so I'm really careful about recommending a specific diet. I think the diet has to be personalized. I think I have to listen to the patient and understand where they're coming from and what they believe is making them feel worse or better, right? And so there are patients that I see who can only eat three foods. I clearly can't do much with that, right? In terms of I can't change that. But if patients really can eat a lot of food, they're just trying to figure out what is better for them, then it's, I guess a little bit easier. And I would say that I generally concentrate on protein and fat as the primary source of fuel that they need and the least inflammatory of what they can put in their body.
And unfortunately, so some healthy foods are actually deliver high levels of substances, which may be triggers. So for example, tuna. Tuna is a wonderful healthy food if it's not laden with mercury, but it's a relatively high histamine food, particularly if it's been sitting around too long. Similarly, lots of berries, for example, really healthy, full of proanthocyanidins, but can be triggers for tomatoes, some foods that we commonly think of as healthy foods.
But what's so, complicated with this is that, you know, I have an MCAS patient that I saw earlier today who has severe MCAS, is reacting, very reactive to a lot of things, but she can eat tomatoes.
Okay.
So it's really not so clear cut. And that's why everyone has to be, looked at individually, has to be personalized. And so it's starting to, I think it's important. I try to look at, is histamine an issue for them? Do we need to lower histamine? Or is sugar an issue for them? So, it turns out that mast cells are exquisitely sensitive to changes in blood sugar. We know that there are insulin receptors on the mast cell. And so metabolic syndrome may be a big link with MCAS. And MCAS may be a driver of metabolic syndrome. I presented on that. I have some literature on that. Eliminating the foods that are going to sort of like processed foods, things that are high in simple sugars, may be most important for them. You know, again, we try to kind of piece that out and figure out what's going to look best,
Okay. Well, when it comes to self-care, there are natural substances that can be mast cell quenchers. So what are some of them that people can access over the counter? We'll get to medications a little later.
Yeah. Well, look, I think about vitamin C. Vitamin C is a natural antihistamine. It may reduce histamine level. So, vitamin C is something that people are familiar with and, feel comfortable taking, right? Unless, obviously there are always conditions, and I have to say this, and I think you have to say it too, that, right, there's always going to be people where it's not going to be right for them. So always, you know, consult with their, you know, practitioner or a health practitioner so that they, you know, understand. But generally speaking, vitamin C is a good tool for some patients. Some patients react to it. Some patients, it's the type of vitamin C, you know, maybe it's corn-derived and it needs to be cassava-derived or something like that. Quercetin is a mast cell stabilizer. Some really good research on quercetin and its effects on as an antihistamine and a mast cell stabilizer. Some patients do very well. Some patients don't. You know, it is one of those chemicals that can slow down a particular enzyme in the body called COMT, which is a enzyme catechol-O-methyltransferase, which is a mouthful, but it's an enzyme that breaks down dopamine and epinephrine and the sort of chemicals that drive like adrenaline. And quercetin can slow that enzyme down. So there are certain people who find that if their enzyme is really already too slow, that it slows it down even more and they get more, let's say, anxious, more irritable, more of whatever. So I'm always very cautious with quercetin, make sure that I, you know, find the right patient for that treatment. And then, you know, there's DAO enzyme, diamine oxidase. It's an enzyme that breaks down histamine in the gut. Again, if histamine in the gut is the big issue, then and the enzyme to break down histamine might be helpful. There are a number of probiotics that have been studied. One of my favorites is Lactobacillus rhamnosus. The rhamnosus strain has been shown to reduce histamine level. And it can be found, and we have it in our store just alone without any other probiotic, because some patients are intolerant to a lot of these strains of probiotics because some strains of probiotic actually increase histamine level.
So just taking probiotics willy-nilly might actually be counterproductive, because there may be a species of probiotic that the person's reacting to among, you know, in like multi-species mixtures.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So those are the main things that I do from a natural perspective. There are certainly other things. There are certain herbs that I'll sometimes use depending on what else, you know, the patient is dealing with. So if I have a patient who I know is dealing with Lyme disease and I know that they had MCAS, but the Lyme definitely exacerbated it, and it's hard for me to treat the Lyme while their MCAS is so you know, so reactive, then I, you know, might use some herbs like Chinese skullcap or some other things that are not specifically known as mast cell stabilizers, but actually do have those types of properties, but also might help the immune system in other ways. I love doing that type of thing where I'm sort of trying to, you know, kind of kill a few birds with one stone, you know, sort of, because if they have to take a lot of things, it becomes difficult, they may be reactive, et cetera.
One thing that has been touted, I think it's a Dr. Theo Harides, who is a fan of luteolin, which I believe comes from celery,
yeah,
and that may have a role in suppressing histamine as well.
Yeah, his research is fascinating. He has some really good research looking. He has an interest in the brain. And inflammation in the brain. And so he's published on the luteolin compound and sometimes in combination with quercetin, sometimes not, and its effects on MCAS and reducing inflammation. Yeah, I use that as well.
Okay. Okay, so then sometimes natural stuff, diet, natural supplements, herbs, not enough. So what types of medications can be helpful for patients? You know, we have the traditional antihistamines. What else?
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, the antihistamines are in that category. We call them H1 blockers. So they'll block the specific histamine receptors that are in the skin in a lot of places in the body. So it's blocking it. The mast cells have histamine receptors on their surface. So those antihistamines might also be working directly on the mast cell, not just blocking histamine. We have another set of antihistamines. They're H2 blockers. And so they're things like Pepcid, are Tagamet, Vantac, which had pulled off the market. But sometimes we use those things in combination, having an H1 and an H2 blocker together, kind of targeting all the histamine receptors together can be helpful. I would say, maybe 60% of my patients will find an antihistamine or antihistamine combo that really makes a huge difference for their underlying MCAS, but it may not be enough. So the next step typically will be going to things like ketotifen, which is can only be compounded, and it is a combination mast cell stabilizer and antihistamine. It's available actually as an eye drop for allergies. People use it. It's called Zaditor. And orally, it can only be compounded. And so that can be very helpful for some people, but not for others. Chromalin, sodium is another one. There are eye drops that you can get for chromalin, but orally, it might be particularly good for people who have the GI manifestations of MCAS. I've also seen it be really good for the nervous system. So the mast cells in the gut are talking to the mast cells in the nervous system, and maybe that's how it's working. There are a variety of other things that we use. Singulair and montelukast is a drug used for asthma. It blocks a particular type of mediator that mast cells make called leukotriene. We have things like anti-inflammatories, like Advil, Motrin, things like that, Celebrex. For a small subset of patients, not some MCAS patients cannot take anti-inflammatory, but some can, and that can make a, have a profound effect. So I think like the take-home message is this, that everybody's mast cells are different, and even within their own body, the different colonies of mast cells are different. And it's a lot of trial and error to find the thing that's going to work for their mast cell. So, if today, let's say I saw, five patients and I used, chromalin in every one of them, there's going to be, and I try chromalin in every one, maybe one or two will have an effect, maybe one or two will not see any effect, and maybe one or two will actually have a worse side effect, feel worse with it. So it's not an easy thing to figure out, but on the bright side, we usually do find the key to their mast cell, the key that shut down their mast cell. Sometimes it just takes a little longer to get there.
And what are patients' prospects for recovery? Is it partial? Can there be a slam dunk home run program that relieves patients of symptoms, or do they have to remain vigilant for life?
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard to say because it may be all of those things. I have patients who, let's say, they're in their 50s and their history is suggestive that they've had MCAS, since they were five. Let's say they've had some allergies, they've had some things that are suggestive that this has been going on for a long time. But maybe they had a big trigger, a few years back. Maybe in a woman, it's hormonal changes or perimenopause. Maybe they were living in a moldy home. They were exposed to some chemical. Something happened that really made it, brought it out. So I've seen patients like that who, we get their mast cells better, we eliminate their triggers. Like the number one thing, even before you treat them, is you got to make sure you know all their triggers. So you eliminate those. And, and maybe it calms down. And so maybe there's a period of time where they don't need to take much because they know how to sort of control a lot of things. And, and maybe they're fine for a while. Some patients might need maintenance of whatever they're taking. And there are patients who can go long periods of time. In remission, I guess that's the way to put it, right? Their mast cells aren't dysfunctional, but they're quiet for the moment until, something happens, some trauma or something, and then they get activated again. So it's, it's hard. Again, everyone is different. I certainly have patients where we figure it out really quickly. We put them on something, we eliminate their triggers, and they're great. They stay on an Allegra every day and their mast cell symptoms are controlled. I certainly have that too. It really depends.
Indeed.
Sound like a broken record. But yeah, it depends. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends. Right. Because it's not an easy disorder to properly diagnose, number one, and then to, once having diagnosed it, to address it, because there's no one size fits all, as you say. And I've learned that in dealing with a lot of patients. There's this new thing that's come around called COVID. COVID has really changed our understanding of the immune system. And now there are a whole slew of patients with long COVID. I presume you're beginning to see some of them. They have, a bewildering array of symptoms. And it's postulated that some, not all, but some of them, an element of their persistent symptoms is MCAS. Can you explain how that might work?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really fascinating, but also, upsetting on many levels. But I'm hopeful we're trying to figure this out. You know, what I would say is this, that the MCAS cells are primed for viruses and infections. That's what they do. So there's no question that anybody who gets COVID will have an activation of their mast cells during that infection. If they had dysfunctional mast cells before they had COVID and they didn't know it, let's say they're not treated, then the mast cells, those dysfunctional mast cells, can become more dysfunctional after COVID. And that's my premise of mine and some of my colleagues' premise of what long COVID is. That in every patient, and again, of course, I'm not saying every single long haul patient, but in the patients that I've seen, and this is a really, the statistic is kind of a little bit, you know, in medicine, I never say 100%, but 100% of the patients, of the long haul patients that I've seen, all have a story that's consistent with MCAS before they had COVID, and they don't know it because, you know, they've had bouts, let's just say.
They were primed to react. They were sort of like a powder keg.
They were primed, but they didn't know it.
Waiting for the fuse
Correct.
To be lit. Okay.
But they didn't know it.
Really?
So they were not diagnosed. They didn't know they had MCAS. They went to the doctor for gastritis. And then they went to the doctor for, joint pain. They went to the doctor for whatever. But no one ever put it together that they actually have an immune dysfunction. And then they get COVID, and then the immune dysfunction just gets worse. It escalates. And so, our approach is, first, I want to try to prove that this is what it is. And I'm not going to say that all long haul COVID is an MCAS. What I'm saying is that the patients that I've seen with long haul COVID all have a story that sounds like they had MCAS. I just can't prove it. But if I test them now, they all test positive for MCAS. And the majority, actually, I can't say all, but most of them, I can get a diagnosis, and then I can treat them. And with targeted therapy against MCAS, many of them have gotten much better. I still think there are pieces that we're missing. You know, I think that the virus is probably doing other things that we don't know. But the MCAS piece is so profound. It makes such a big difference to know about it that, that I think that it's important that, we at least address that. Because that makes sense.
And by inference, since the vaccine is like a little bit of COVID, for some people who've had vaccine reactions, not necessarily to the Pfizer, the Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, but any number of vaccines, and I've seen vaccine reactions to the Zostavax vaccine, for example, for shingles.
What?
It is MCAS part and parcel of that?
Yeah. And, we just published on, Dr. Afrin and I published another colleague on HPV, the HPV vaccine or Gardasil vaccine, and how it escalates MCAS. And again, I think it's important to note that we don't really believe that it's the vaccine that's causing MCAS, but that there's probably underlying MCAS already that a vaccine could, and that could be a vaccine, it could be a medication, it could be some event that then sets off the mast cells to a point that they're, completely escalated and uncontrollable until you gain control over it. And I think that's really, I think that does explain a lot of, I mean, we can't prove it yet, but I think that explains a lot of reaction to vaccine.
Okay. Well, you've certainly done a great job in covering a lot of ground. This is a complicated subject. Where can listeners learn more? What are some of the resources? You have a website as well for the AIM Center?
Yeah, we do. AIM Center, PM, P as in Peter, M as in Mary, .com. I have my website, drtanyadempsey.com. On Facebook, I'm using right now Dr. Tanya Dempsey. and on Instagram.
And it's spelled T-A-N-I-A, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And Dempsey, the usual spelling, D-E-M-P-S-E-Y.
That's right. That's right. What else? I've done, and what we're trying to do is put all the stuff on the website, all the podcasts and lectures. And, you know, my goal is to really educate, like yours, right? You want to get the message out there. You want people to start to understand, you know, themselves and what they can do and how to communicate with their doctors to help them. So that's, you know, we try to put all that information out there.
Okay. Well, you know, I must congratulate you again, because you've taken on a very, very challenging area of medicine, dealing with complex patients and using this unified theory that's talked about in the book, Occam's Razor, the razor that cuts through all the BS and complications, the razor that actually slices through it all. MCAS may be certainly an important contributor. And you really exemplify, I think, what is the best of what a physician should be, which is being scholarly, you know, paying attention to the medical literature, using the best of your conventional medical training, but also thinking out of the box and thinking in an open-minded and innovative way about both medical therapies, conventional medical therapies, combining them with natural and lifestyle changes to take your patients forward. So that is truly a model for us to emulate. And that is a heartfelt compliment. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thanks for your great work on behalf of patients. That was Dr. Tanya Dempsey. Thanks, folks, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.